The Hundred Years' War, the De Guiscolin period, war in Flanders, 1382 to 1383. Well, we're actually in a period. This period of 1382-1383 is going to be in two parts. There's a section where we'll be dealing with Flanders, and then we'll have to rush back over to Portugal and deal with the Portuguese-Spanish issue before coming back to Flanders again and finishing them up. So if you just want to think about it, that, you know, we've had those revolts of the cities and, of course, in France and in England. Well, now we've had these two events on these outer sides while the English are trying to figure out what they're going to do and what the French are trying to get some sort of a treaty to deal with. So it's going to be a kind of a confused period. So I'm going to do a few shows initially on the goings-on in Flanders, picking up where we left off, and then we'll stop and run back over to Portugal, deal with that, and then finish up with Flanders again. On May the 3rd, 1382, a few days after the collapse of talks at Tournai, Philip van Artevelde gambled the fate of Ghent on a single desperate stroke. About 4,000 men from Ghent appeared without warning outside the walls of Bruges. They were led by Philip himself and his principal lieutenants, Peter van de Bosch and Francis Ackerman. They had left Ghent on the previous day and had marched unseen through the night. Most of them were citizen soldiers, but there was a small corps of German and English mercenaries and an artillery train. It was a day on which the bourgeois traditionally stopped work early to take part in the procession of the Holy Blood and to drink themselves senseless. Towards the end of the afternoon, the army of Ghent halted in a large meadow southwest of the town, known as Bevershotsfeld. The Count of Flanders was in the castle on the eastern side of the town when the news was brought to him. There was a hurried conference with the guild leaders and the captain of the town. The captain wanted to close the gates and take his time to organize the defense, but the count favored a more aggressive response. So the trumpeters passed through the crowded streets to call men-at-arms. Towards the end of the afternoon, Louis de Mal led his army, a mixed crowd of experienced soldiers, armed townsmen, out of the gates. They moved forward without order or discipline, full of meat and wine. It was an unseasonably warm day, and the sun was already low in the sky, shining into their faces as they marched. The army of Ghent was waiting in battle order. Their archers were drawn up on the front together with the artillery. As the horde of the Bruges approached, archers and cannons simultaneously opened fire. The count's army reeled before the shock. Its front line thinned out as men and horses fell to the ground beneath a volley of missiles. Then the men of Ghent advanced in a body and began to slaughter the bourgeois. The count's own company was surrounded and Louis himself briefly unhorsed. At this point, some of the bourgeois deserted to the other side. They were almost certainly members of the weavers and fullers guilds, men who had supported the cause of Ghent in 1379. In the confusion, the whole mass turned and fled towards the town, pursued by the victorious men of Ghent. When they reached the gate, the enemy pressed in after them. The cloth workers appeared on the streets to welcome them. Louis de Mal managed to escape from the press of men and find his way back to the castle. There he tried to organize a counterattack. In the marketplace, under the shadow of the great belfry of the cloth hall, the loyal guilds, the butchers, fishmongers, cutlers, and furriers gathered in their lines to defend their town. The count led his men-at-arms through the streets to reinforce them. But before he reached the marketplace, the men of Ghent and the cloth workers of Bruges invaded the square. The count's allies were massacred. His troops were forced to turn back. Louis now himself took refuge in a hovel built into the city walls. That night he escaped through a window, swam the moat, and made off on foot in the open country. In spite of the support he had received from the cloth workers, Philip van Artevelde treated Bruges as a conquered city. A garrison was installed. Two captains, Peter van de Bosch and a drier called Peter de Winter, were appointed as governors. On the day after the battle, the inhabitants were assembled in a great open space in front of the monastery of St. Catherine's, outside the walls, and made to swear an oath of loyalty towards the new regime. A heavy indemnity was laid upon the town, and many prominent inhabitants were rounded up and sent off to Ghent as hostages for its payment. Three of the gates were demolished, together with 30 feet of the wall on either side, and the spoil used to fill up the ditches. The men of Ghent sacked the count's residence and his castle. For 3 days they went through the streets looting the houses of the rich and those associated with Louis's government. but their main objective was food stores. Grain, flour, wine, and salted meat were seized and loaded in the carts, in the hundreds of carts, to relieve the hunger of Ghent. The political consequences of the battle were dramatic. The blockade of Ghent was broken. In Ypres, the cloth workers took over the town and sent their submission to Philip van Artevelde. He was received there as a hero. The whole of the maritime region in the west followed the lead of Ypres. Contrai threw out the count's officers. By the end of May 1382, Louis de Mal's government had collapsed in most of the Flemish-speaking Flanders. After a number of adventures, Louis de Mal eventually reached the French-speaking city of Lille. From here, he withdrew at about the beginning of June to his castle at Hesdin in Picardy. Louis de Mal's officers remained in control of three Walloon-speaking castleries in southern Flanders, but the only places in Flemish-speaking regions that were still held by his partisans were the two towns of Oudenaarde and Dendermonde. These were minor places, but of incomparable strategic value, for they enabled Louis to close the River Scheldt to navigation on both sides of Ghent. The focal point of the struggle which followed was Oudenaarde. The town had suffered more than any place in Flanders in the 3 years since the Civil War began. Repeatedly fought over, it had been battered by artillery, its walls partially demolished, and its trade ruined. Much of the population had abandoned it and migrated elsewhere. Louis sent a corps of 450 elite soldiers under a Flemish nobleman called Daniel de Halwayn to hold the husk of walls, buildings, and frightened inhabitants. Halwayn and his companions prepared to fight to the end. They demolished every building outside the walls with an arrow shot. They sent away most of their horses. Women, those too old or too young to fight, were expelled. Food was laid in. Ghent threw all its strength against the town. Early in June 1382, a vast army appeared outside the walls, raised from the citizens of Ghent and its subject towns. It was stiffened with a corps of professional mercenaries, including 300 English archers, most of them deserters from the garrison of Calais, drawn by high rates of pay on offer. They invested Oudenaarde from both sides of the Scheldt. Bridges of boats were thrown across the river upstream and down to seal off access by water. Siege engines were sighted around the walls and hurled great stones into the town. Gunpowder artillery was placed in front of the main gates, including a huge bombard whose roar could be heard more than 20 miles away. Across Flanders, the struggle took on all the savagery of class war. The count supporters were proscribed. Many of them fled to Walloon regions of France. The rural mansions of the nobility and the rich were attacked and burned by raiding parties from towns. At the Count's castle at Mal, the mob of Bruges was shown the cradle in which Louis had been nursed as a baby and in the font in the chapel which he had been baptized. They smashed them into small pieces and sent them off as trophies to Ghent. The collapse of Louis de Mal's government in Flanders occurred just as the English Parliament was about to assemble in Westminster. So we'll see if the English are going to get involved in it, which of course they are. Now the sources for this, The Hundred Years' War, The Chronicles by Froissart, The Hundred Years' War by Perrois, The Hundred Years' War by Nylans, and The Hundred Years' War, The House Divided, Volume 3, by Sumption. So I hope you enjoyed that, and as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out our merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.